I always remember when I was interviewed, I was asked if I wanted to make a difference or if I wanted to make money. And I answered the question that I wanted to make a difference. And the interviewer, who was the director of the business at the time, always remembered, I didn't think I'd answered the question correctly by the expression on her face. But nevertheless, I got the position. And that has always been fundamental for me in my journey as a recruiter, is to be made a difference.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. In today's episode, you'll meet one of our coaching clients, Melanie DeBeer.
Being on the phone and being face-to-face to clients is critical. It's key. People really do enjoy it, and you connect with people at a very, very strong level.
Melanie's the director of Full Circle Selection in Johannesburg. She has over 25 years of experience recruiting in the finance and engineering sectors. In this interview, you'll hear the story of how Melanie transitioned from top-performing recruiter to building a high-performing team, which, as I'm sure you can appreciate, is a completely different skill set.
We had a challenge the other day with a client, and this is very powerful. As a leader, I always felt that I had to give everybody the answers. But I got onto a call and said, this is a challenge, what do we do? And we rallied around. And the collective wisdom that we have as a team is very, very directive. We get a lot of direction from it, and it's really driven the business forward a lot.
If you're a business owner, you'll also enjoy hearing how Melanie has successfully made the shift from being fully in the business to working strategically on the business. Meaning she's building a business that is not overly reliant on her personal billings.
The biggest challenge is that I love what I do. I feel like every component of recruitment I love. And I realized that I had to make a decision. I can't juggle all of these balls. And my business is not going to grow, and it's not going to upscale. And if I could free myself from certain activities within the business, my business is going to flourish. My business is going to grow. And not only that, it was pointed out to me, and this is what I love, is that when my team succeeds, I'm going to feel a sense of fulfillment.
This episode is a special one to me because since recording this interview, Melanie has joined my team as an associate coach here at Recruitment Coach. That means she'll be working one-on-one with our clients to support them in growing their recruitment businesses. Melanie is such a great fit for us for several reasons. Number one, her own experience and track record in recruitment is impressive. Number two, she's also a highly experienced trainer and coach. And number three, she's been through our program, so she knows our strategies really, really well. On top of all that, it's quite amazing that she's built her business to the point where she can actually give us a few hours per week while her own team keeps Full Circle Selection going full steam ahead. With that being said, let's dive in. Melanie, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark. I'm looking forward to it. Lovely to see you.
You too, absolutely. So you and I have gotten to know each other pretty well over the last year, but our history together goes back much longer than that. Would you mind sharing how you first heard of me?
Absolutely. So I was living in the UK, about 20 years ago now, first came across you. I was in the recruitment space and then subsequently in the coaching space. And I wanted to coach some of my clients around more effective strategies for their coaching, for their recruitment rather. And I came across some of your modules and also wanted to improve my own recruitment. And yeah, I found your material to be very, very useful and very valuable. And I always remembered your materials. So then when I wanted to improve and upskill myself this year, I immediately thought of you and re-engaged with you because I wanted to really develop Full Circle to its full potential this year. We then re-engaged, and it's been a great journey from there.
I love that. And so happy that we reconnected after... You know, so I have been doing this a long time, and so have you, and so it's nice. So let's go back even further. How did you get into recruiting in the first place, Melanie?
Great. So my mom was in recruitment, also a top biller, also very successful. Yes, and they had a position within her organization, and I was recruited for it. And I always remember when I was interviewed, I was asked if I wanted to make a difference or if I wanted to make money. And I answered the question that I wanted to make a difference. And the interviewer, who was the director of the business at the time, always remembered I didn't think I'd answered the question correctly by the expression on her face. But nevertheless, I got the position. And that has always been fundamental for me in my journey as a recruiter, is to be made a difference. I started in a tower at the time, a generalist recruiter who's evidently still very well positioned in South Africa. And then I saw an advertisement for a recruiter in Ireland, and I applied. And there were 60 people interviewed, and out of those 60, four were taken to Ireland. It was a specialist recruitment company. They specialized in finance. I was with them for 3 years, initially in the Dublin branch and then later in the Belfast branch, where I achieved 40% more than anybody else in terms of the targets. So I really enjoyed that position. And then I did some coaching for a couple of years, really enjoyed the coaching. And then I decided I wanted to come back to South Africa. So then I was recruited by one of the leading recruitment companies in South Africa, quite a large group of recruitment companies, enjoyed my time there. And then somebody said to me, you know, also again, was top biller. Out of all the new recruits, I was the top biller. I was promoted several times. I was promoted to production manager. I was promoted to team leader, did a lot of training for them. And then somebody just one day said to me, why are you not doing this for yourself? You know, why are you not, you know, you ran your own business in Northern Ireland. Why are you not? And I started doing it again and ran it successfully. And then I was headhunted. Sorry, it's a bit of a long story.
That's all right. It's good. You know, when you get to our age, Melanie, there's twists and turns, right, in the journey. It's not a straight path.
Yes. And I was recruiting for a executive recruiter who also had a contingency arm. So, and then all of these recruiters, I learned so much. All of these companies were very, very valuable to me. So I was with them for 3 years, and again, top performer, 8 months out of 12, got the medal, really enjoyed it. And then I had my son, and my husband said to me, you know what? Do this for yourself. You can do flexi hours. You can work for yourself. And from there, Mark, it's been an incredible journey. It really has. I started as a solo recruiter, and then I've just scaled up and scaled up. And now I have 6 recruiters working for me.
Amazing.
Yeah, and it's given me that balance. And again, through reconnecting with you, there's a lot of exciting things to share. It's been a really, really exciting time.
So thank you for that great overview of your career trajectory. I wanted to just go back briefly to the very beginning, because it's not very often that I speak to people whose parents work in recruiting and that was their inspiration. Sometimes we have a few clients who they are second generation recruiters. Typically they're parent maybe owned a firm or bought a franchise or whatever, and they worked in the family business. But so what was it that attracted you? Obviously, your mom was a role model. You could see what she was doing. But what was it about recruiting that you thought, I'm going to have a go at that?
Such an interesting question. So even though my mom was in recruitment, I didn't really have much exposure to seeing her in the job and seeing her in action, even though as a child, we used to go in and do a filing for her back in the olden days. but I think when I started my journey, it was the diversity. It was, there's so many components and aspects to recruitment that I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I love learning. I love growing. So yes, there was the making the difference, but there's all these components. And I think there's this, in the industry, people think that it's HR or that there's you recruit, but there's, you know, being able to help somebody through getting a job, you know, coaching them for the interview, working with your clients and building rapport and building credibility, doing the business development, getting to learn the industries. So whilst I didn't really see all those components to my mom, when I actually went in, I mean, I used to get up at 6 and go into the office, and it was just this contagious energy in the office that I loved and I just couldn't get enough of. And like I said, I think the key component for me was the learning and the development and the growing, and it just never ended. Just
awesome.
Kept going.
I love the contagious energy is a word that I would use to describe you, actually. So,
oh, lovely. Thank you, Mark.
What attracted you about moving to Ireland?
Well, again, interestingly enough, I'd always wanted to live in Ireland from a little girl. So my dad comes from the island. A lot of his family were from Ireland. And I dreamt of being in Ireland. So I don't, you know, the opportunity arose. I saw the advert in the paper and I applied for it. And yeah, went through the process and was fortunate enough to be chosen. And again, very excitingly, I also knew people in Ireland that I wanted to reconnect with. So it was a great opportunity for me.
Fantastic. So in terms of you've been top performer in numerous companies, but which one do you really think of as being the most significant part of your career before starting your own business?
That's such a good question. I think possibly the last one. And I say that because I think that when I re-entered the market in South Africa, the training that I gained then was exceptional. There was a lot of, it was a solid training program. So we trained for 2 weeks and I leveraged a lot off of that in the final role, and then also gained more experience, more consultative experience within the last role that I had. And I think at that stage, I had a lot of experience under my belt. And also there was good leadership. There was definitely good leadership. I think very importantly, that my manager and leader and mentor at the time, she had a lot of structures in place. And that really supports me. I'm very good with looking at my ratios, looking at my numbers. And I really am good at working with that and then leveraging off of that. So I think the culture and the systems and the experience combined together really grew me as an individual and the support that I gained. Yeah.
It's so interesting, Melanie, because a lot of recruiting firms mistakenly think, oh, if we hire someone experienced, they won't need any training. And what you've just described is coming into a role where you already are highly experienced, but you still went through quite a rigorous training process. Why do you think that's important throughout your career, not just when you're getting started?
So I've learned with myself, and even this year, that sometimes you take shortcuts and those shortcuts don't pay off. So it's so important to go back to basics sometimes and relearn, because I think maybe even as a seasoned recruiter, you get into a comfort space and you can take a shortcut and not qualify a candidate for a position correctly or not qualify the spec properly. And the more detailed you are, the better chance you have to be successful in all components of your business. So not just with the candidate, not just with the client, but, and again, this is why I wanted really the best for my business this year, because I can be quite intuitive and, you know, sometimes I do joke with my team and I say, you know, I'm the queen of shortcuts. So that's why sometimes you need to take that step back and fine tune and streamline and reinvest in yourself and relook, because you learn and it's invigorating and it's refreshing and you re-implement. And you know, sometimes it's like the story of the hare and the tortoise. You know, sometimes if you just take that step back, you achieve more. And that was one of our goals this year, was to focus on quality versus quantity. Because Again, another analogy that really struck with me this year was we were running around like headless chickens and not being the eagle. So sometimes you really just need to pause, be that eagle who's the visionary, be strategic, put the systems in place, learn clearly, have plans in place, and you'll achieve so much more by just slowing down.
Brilliant. I couldn't agree more. We're going to spend the majority of our time talking about full circle selection because that's your own business and it's the most recent thing, you know, project you're working on. But I would love to hear a little more about your most recent role before you launched your own firm, because you said that's one you're especially proud of. There was a lot of growth. You worked within, you know, having that structure. Why do you think you achieved the award as like a top achiever award, as well as having been promoted multiple times in that firm? What were the, like, if you had to really analyze what contributed to your success, what were the most important success factors?
The thing that stands out for me, so when I joined the business, there weren't structures in place. And then a exceptional leader joined. And that leadership and that structure, and again, being a seasoned recruiter, you would think, just to your point, that people don't need that structure. They don't need that mentorship. They don't need that guidance. I worked a lot of specs in the beginning that were on their PSL, their preferred suppliers agreements and so forth. But with her leadership and her guidance, we identified where I was best placed. What was my strengths? What did I do well at? How I could manage my desk more effectively. So it was leveraging off my strengths, my abilities, and then also, so it was her guidance. It was looking at what I could do. And then she also gave me the autonomy. She knew that I could work well, and that she could let me go and do. So a little bit of guidance, a little bit of direction, and the right steps. And she also did some training. There was some training. So it was all of those things. And also, I think very importantly, is that they had an excellent reputation in the market. So there was credibility. So they definitely, they had that niche market and they had the credibility and they were very well positioned in the market. So I had that support. I had my own reputation. And then I had the leadership, and it's a brand that I was very strong, very, very proud to work for. So you really had that. Yeah.
And so you mentioned that, when you started working with this new leader, she helped you to focus on your strengths and, be more effective. What were some of the specific shifts that you made, Melanie, that had an impact?
So the biggest thing, Mark, was that I'm very good at relationship building and I'm very good at a certain space in the market. So we looked at that space and we developed that space. I am good at sourcing. I'm exceptionally good at identifying talent in the market, but the best usage of my time is to build relationships and go out and, again, to see clients more. Go out and see clients, engage with clients, have that interaction with clients. It's so, so important. And I think this was pre-COVID, but what's coming up for me, and again, something that I've learned this year, is that being on the phone and being face-to-face to clients is critical. It's key. People really do enjoy it. And you connect with people at a very, very strong level, and you build those relationships. So that was one thing. She encouraged me to get out more and see people. And I had, in terms of the level of closing the positions that I have and my ratios, they improved. Also, working on specs exclusively, that was also something we looked at, building those relationships, building them solidly so that we could have those quality specs. Also, interestingly enough, I would tend to send less candidates. I've always wanted to only send 3 candidates, and she encouraged me to send more, as she felt that it would be better to have more candidates in front of clients. So there were small tweaks and small adjustments. So just to summarize, really having a look at building those relationships, getting out in front of people, looking at tracking your activity, looking at your ratios. We always say working closest to the money. So again, one of the key things I always do, and I've learned in this industry throughout, is looking at working the most qualified business and working effectively. And just, again, it's just about working smarter, not harder. So those are the things we did. We worked effectively. We worked efficiently.
Love it. So if I can double click on a few of those factors, then one you said is getting out in front of clients more. I could not agree more, Melanie. I think this is something which all our listeners need to really think about is, you know, getting FaceTime with clients, that time is so valuable in terms of building the relationship. And then you mentioned, it was a separate point, but I think they're connected, is your closing ratio improved, right? And I do believe that if you've spent time in person with the client, that will have a positive impact on your success rate of filling those jobs.
Agreed.
The other thing that you mentioned was getting more exclusive jobs. And again, building the trust face-to-face makes it easier for the client to give you that exclusivity. So I think there's a number of benefits that all come back to building relationships in person. Now, what does that look like in terms of if you're working a local market, then that's theoretically that's easier. Well, not theoretically, that is easier, right? Because you don't have to travel too far to go and see people. So I want you to thinking, our listeners thinking of two things. Number one, if you work a local market, are you getting out and seeing your clients every week? Are you making time for that? And number two, if you work a more national or even an international market, then how can you create opportunities to get in front of clients? And our clients do it in one of two ways. Either number one, they go on road trips where they'll say, go to a particular city or a number of cities where they have kind of a concentration of clients, and they'll go and see existing clients. And then while they're in town, they will book new business meetings along with that. So that's one option. And we've seen people having a lot of success with that. And although it sounds like I'm going to be spending a lot of money on flights, hotels, and travel, and there's no guarantee that it's going to pay off. But the reality is it will pay off, making that investment of time and money. The second way that some of our clients do it is through attending industry events. So they'll target an event that is well attended by their market, and they know that some of their clients are already going to be there. So it's an opportunity to meet with existing clients that maybe you've never had a chance to be in the same room with before and cement those relationships as well as meet others face to face. So where there's a will, there's a way. Get in front of your clients. So Melanie, the other thing you said was looking at ratios. What were the most important metrics that you have paid attention to and that had an impact?
So I think in terms of working qualified specs, I mean, I think our ratios are looking at how qualified the spec is, how qualified the candidate is, looking at getting candidates in front of clients. And then obviously within each of those, there's steps. You know, we get times from clients so that we get the exclusivity from clients. There's lots of different ratios. Also what we've done is we've increased our fees. So that's also been very good this year. So the matrix are obviously the referrals. So sending out CVs, how many CVs do we send to get a referral? How many referrals to placements? So there's all those, you know, referrals that we look at, and then obviously we break them down to, you know, how many our placement ratios. So how big is our placement? How many placements are we making per month? What is our average placement fee? So that's also something we're focusing on, is getting our placement fees up. Because again, we're working this year, our placement fee has gone up so that you can start working bigger placement fees. So those are all the different things that we're assessing and that we're looking at. That's gone up this year as well. You know, again, we're doing less referrals and we're making more placements. And our placement fee, like I said, has gone up.
Now, just to clarify the terminology, when you say referral, does that mean introducing a candidate to a client?
Yes.
So is that a South African term or?
Yes. It's a South African term.
Interesting. Yes. Okay, cool. So some people in the States, people call that a send out, where you're arranging an interview for with a client but referral. I like that. It makes sense. You're referring the candidate to the client.
Okay, so we actually, technically, the right way is referral is when you receive the interview. The send out is actually when they go. But in our business, we've just called it a referral and we've just kept it a referral. So if they don't go, then we just take it off our stats.
Got it. Okay, so the send out, you're right. The send out is the interview, but the referral is introducing the client, the candidate and the client in submission or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, and then what I love about all those metrics that you're looking at, Melanie, is that people don't realize how big of an impact small improvements can make when you combine them together. So if you can increase your average fee, if you can improve the number of referred candidates who get an interview, and you just can make small increases across a number of those metrics, the sort of compound effect of all those improvements is significant. And the beauty of it is, you're not working harder. You mentioned this earlier, working smarter rather than harder. You're doing the same number of hours. You know, you're working physically the same amount, but you're getting a much greater return because you've analyzed your numbers, you've identified areas that can be improved, and you've worked on making those improvements, and the results can be astonishing. So that's super cool. Did you have something else you wanted to add?
Yeah, it's just on the fees. I mean, when we originally started this year with the course and it was mentioned increase your fees, a little part of me thought, oh, it's not feasible. We just submit our fees at a higher rate now and we don't get questioned. Sometimes we do. Of course, we're going to get questioned sometimes, but I would say 7 out of 10 clients are happy to go with it. And here we were all this time putting it at a lower rate because that's what we thought other agencies were charging. So, I mean, that's been a massive win for us. Again, you know, it's just far more efficient and clients are happy to pay that. They're not questioning it. Obviously, where they want to negotiate, we do and we look at it and, you know, are we exclusive and we negotiate on certain terms. But yes, I mean, it's good to ask bigger questions. It's good to ask for exclusivity. And if you're not asking the questions, you're not getting better results.
I love it. And so what you're referring to is an exercise that we do with all our clients when we first connect, and we call it Terms of Business Booster. And the objective is to increase your average fee percentage. And people are always scared to do it because they believe in their mind, like, oh, my clients aren't going to agree to that, or it's very competitive. They're, you know, I don't want to charge too much and lose the business. We have all these mental barriers, don't we, to why it won't work and why it's risky. And we, you know, encourage and coach people to try it, right? Because what have you got to lose? Worst case scenario is you go back to what your, you know, original fee was. But what we've done this with hundreds of recruiting firms now. And what we find is almost always people are able to increase their average fee percentage. And with the exact same number of placements, the same amount of effort, they're making more money. And a lot of that doesn't mean that you never get pushback. Of course, you know, every market is price sensitive. That's the other thing, Melanie, is that everyone believes that their market is uniquely difficult, more price sensitive, more competitive. So whether it's in South Africa, whether it's in New York, whether it's here in Scotland, whether it's in London, and in any market, you know, whether it's construction or sales or software or financial services or accounting, every recruiter thinks, I can't increase my fee. It's too competitive. And yet we've proven over and over again that that you can. And it's about, you know, asking, number one, the question, and if required, making the case for why the fee is what it is. But if surprisingly, often you don't even get questioned on it.
Agreed.
It's quite amazing. So for our listeners, we have a whole workshop on this. I'm not going to get into that now, but set yourself the goal of increasing your fee, because if you're in every marketplace, there's a range of prices, right? There's the cheap ones and there's the premium, like most expensive ones. Where are you on that spectrum right now? I would suggest that if you deliver an extremely high quality service that is just as good, if not better, to your competitors, why shouldn't you be positioned at the top end of that range and be a premium provider rather than like one of the, you know, cost-effective providers? If you believe in your service, then you should price it accordingly. And the corollary to that is sometimes undercharging reflects in the client's perception. They're going to perceive that as you're not the quality or the high end of the market, right? Clients expect to, you know, we all think you get what you pay for. And so if you price your fees too low, what message does that send to the market? So something worth thinking about. Melanie, we've naturally kind of moved into talking about full circle. So let's dive into that now. When did you launch the business?
So I launched it 6 years ago. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Brilliant. Hmm. So you already explained the motivation to do that, and it was to do with having more flexibility for your growing family. Could you say a little more about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, I had my son, and I had run my own business in Northern Ireland as well, in the coaching space. And so I'd run my business here in South Africa as well in recruitment. And like I said, then I was headhunted. So, yeah, it was just like a natural progression to start it up again. I just basically, while I was on maternity leave, I decided that I would start looking at the fundamentals of it. And when I went back, I spoke to the business that I was with, and we agreed. They also, again, were very good. They asked me if I would do some business with them, and then I made the transition. It's just grown from leaps and bounds from then. Obviously, a lot of hard work. But yes, it's set it up. Initially, I mean, I've got a background in most niche areas. I've done financial recruitment. I've done IT recruitment. So it's basically started with my financial, and then I've just grown from there.
So Melanie, let's talk about this in more depth. So you started your business 6 years ago. It was just you.
Yes.
What was how did you like get the ball rolling, and what was the first year like?
Sure. Okay. So a lot of what I guess all the business development principles I knew worked. So I thought about what would be most impactful, and marketed specific skill into the market, candidates that I knew were in demand, and I had success with that. I've also always had a look at clients that are advertising. Mm-hmm. And that has always been a very, very good entry point for me. And that, even to this day, I've still got clients from those clients that were advertising, and clients that look for specific skill. So the business really grew from there. I also looked at clients and marketed into them with specific messages, identified clients, and sent out valuable information to them. And that's just basically, it's just grown from there.
Love it.
And then I started taking on one or two part-time employees, people just to help me type CVs and help me with the admin. I had a friend's mom that was looking for some part-time hours, and she was a researcher. And then she helped me make some placements. And then just grew team by team. And now I've got, like I said, 5 people helping me with marketing, researching, and 2 fully-fledged recruitment consultants.
Love it. So we're going to talk about the building of a team in a second, because that's a really challenging but potentially rewarding part of this journey. So your kind of go-to market strategy was a combination of what we call ad chasing, so companies that are advertising in your space, as well as presenting candidates with skills that are in demand. We call that MPC marketing.
Yes.
But essentially you're presenting a candidate to a company where you think that they might be interested in that that profile. So what were some of the hurdles or the challenges in that first year? Because first year in business, getting things started can be, I mean, that's make it or break it stuff, right? Like you need to make this work. So how did it go in that first 12 months? Like at what point did you start making placements and were there any real triumphs or setbacks during that first phase?
So, and I also need to mention, sorry, the third point was I've always leveraged off my networks and my relationships that I have. So that's critical. I've always done that. I don't remember any major setbacks, Mark, to be honest. I think that I've always had a strategy. I've always put it in place in all the businesses that I've started in. I've made placements. I know it's not always feasible and it's not always possible, but I've made placements pretty quickly. So I think, like I said, I leverage off relationships that I have. I leverage off, look at where I can make placements relatively quickly. And I think also that's because I don't look at big executive placements, you know, or even though I do the CFO placements and so forth, I look at a range of where I can go and, you know, I place bookkeepers as well and that sort of thing. So I think for me, the hurdles that I genuinely face over the years have been just consistency. And that's something that we've implemented now. So consistency, having systems in place, the having marketing material in place, having the foundation in place has been, it's not necessarily been billing or the business development or the client relationships. It's to an extent, yes, the market awareness and growing that and the consistency of clients. I can typically generate new clients, but I'm not necessarily always getting those longevity in clients because sometimes it's just a client that'll come to me that you find in a lead generation that only needs one billing, and that's been the challenge. So we have clients that come to us once that only need that one requirement. So this year we really want to do upscale and go, who needs recruitment requirements on a long-term basis so that we're building better quality relationships. So over the time in Full Circle, it's been more about systems, upskilling people, and really getting more of a solid foundation and streamlining all of our processes. So and also just, again, having more consistency in BD, not just trying one or two approaches, being able to try a lot of different approaches. So I think it's something that we've covered in the course when we've spoken about it. It's this roller coaster effect, you know, having a lot of business and then not having business. I think overall, that's the challenges that I faced.
It makes total sense. I'm sure a lot of people can resonate with that for sure. It's not unique to you. And so, great. So before we go on to talking about growing the team, putting the systems, processes, and the foundation in place, you mentioned that you'll place anything from a bookkeeper to a CFO. What's your strategy behind that? Having like being able to work, you know, make placements throughout the entire finance and accounting department?
So we have different consultants that will work at different levels.
Okay.
So yes, so I have a couple of consultants that work at different levels. So we know that they have a network in that area and they can refer pretty quickly and they continue to look for that skill and they work those positions. So again, I've identified consultants. We also work in the engineering space and I've got a consultant that works exceptionally well in the technical space. She's got the aptitude. So we identify who's got the aptitude, the skill, the network, the experience to work within those areas.
Great. That makes sense. Yes. So it's not necessarily the same person filling all those jobs vertically within the organization.
No, no.
But at the same time, the benefit of that is exactly what you spoke about earlier, is having repeat business potential. Because if you only, there's only one position in that team that you specialize in, then that client may not need you again for quite a while. Whereas if you place somebody as a candidate and then they can become a client and then you help place other people within their teams, then that creates a lot more opportunity, I guess, right?
Absolutely. So we are really seen as talent acquisition specialists. We do focus on finance and engineering, but a lot of clients do come to us for other positions. And I've got consultants who are able to then, because we've got a range of different consultants with different skill sets, we're then able to assist.
Great. So when did you start hiring first the part-time people and then, you know, full-time and then recruitment consultants? What were the milestones in that process?
So in the second year, I hired a junior person who had come out of school, and he did our admin and our typing of our CVs. And then I hired a lady who had retired, and she was a friend of ours, who was highly skilled HR lady, and she did sourcing for us. And that was fantastic. It was really exceptional for the business. She did some really, really good sourcing. And then from there, I hired two additional ladies who we've developed really, really well, exceptional potential, really committed. I'm really, really fortunate to have them in the business. We've upskilled them. So one of the ladies has also got an HR background, but she's also very, very good at sourcing. And then the other lady started in admin, but is looking more at sales and business development and sourcing. And then I also hired within that year a 360-degree consultant who's come leaps and bounds. And then this year I recruited more of an executive recruiter who is also doing exceptionally well.
Brilliant.
So there's a mix of skills.
Yes.
There's a mix of skills. And this year, there's definitely been a breakthrough in terms of how we've been utilizing that skill and how my role's developed from being very operational, making a lot of targets, to my consultants making the targets, me stepping back and me being strategic.
Awesome. I want to really delve into that, Melanie. But first, a couple of observations. One is that you have a mixture of skills in the business, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. complement each other. And mm-hmm. so that can be powerful. But I'm interested in the order in which you made these hires, because it's exactly what we would recommend. Mm. And actually, I read a book recently, which was really good. I'm sure you'd enjoy it. Dan Martell. It's called Buy Back Your Time.
Oh, great.
And now he talks about building software companies, which is how he's done. He's got a portfolio of companies that generate hundreds of millions of dollars per annum. But he talks about as the founder and the initial, you know, when you start a business, you do all the jobs, right?
Yes.
But if you have ambitions to grow and scale something, you have to start replacing yourself and buying back your time in certain areas.
Mm.
And it makes sense to start out with the admin, right? That is probably, for most people who are growing a business, going to be the first hire is somebody to do admin. Take that off your plate. Free up that time that you can then reinvest in the, you know, higher revenue generating or more strategic activities. And then the next thing, probably in a recruiting business, this isn't Dan Martell because he's talking about software, but in recruiting, the next thing that you're probably going to want to replace yourself in is the sourcing, right?
Yes.
And so that's exactly what you did. Intuitively, you knew that was the order that made sense for you to be able to grow your firm. So thinking back over the last couple of years as you've been growing, what's been the biggest challenge? It's not easy, and that's why many, many recruiters just stay solo producers, because often people try and grow, it doesn't work out, they end up spending a lot of money, and then they're right back where they started. What have been the biggest challenges for you looking to build a business rather than just have be a recruiter who's self-employed?
So for me, the biggest challenge is that I love what I do. I love And I've sat on the fence with this, and then I had a breakthrough about 2 months ago. So
okay.
I feel like every component of recruitment I love. And then I had a breakthrough conversation within Recruitment Coach, and I realized that I had to make a decision. I am equally, if not more, important in the business, or I'm better placed in the business doing my client engagement. Sourcing I love to a certain degree, and I feel a sense of achievement when I place people, but I can't juggle all of these balls, and my business is not going to grow, and it's not going to upscale. And if I could free myself from certain activities within the business, not just sourcing, but operationally, my business is going to flourish. My business is going to grow. And not only that, it was pointed out to me, and this is what I love, is that when my team succeeds, I'm going to feel a sense of fulfillment. And I've seen my team grow and succeed, and it's been so, so rewarding. So the challenge for me was letting go. The challenge for me was thinking, is pulling the arrow back. That this year for me was pulling the arrow back, implementing a lot of really solid systems and procedures and training and development. I sat with each team member, we looked at their strengths, and it was eye-opening because I had all the skills and resources right there. And I was assuming, or not even assuming, I was hovering over my business. And suddenly there was this breakthrough. One of my ladies that was more administrative was sourcing here and there, and I was hands off sourcing. And it actually, I've enjoyed it. I've loved it. The business is thriving because I made this change. So it is scary. It's hard at first, but when you make these changes and you see your business doing better and better and better, it's very rewarding. And it's impactful. So we've done more one-to-ones, we've done lunches and learning, we've implemented incentives, and we've looked at ways to upskill, and it's like I said, it's been impactful.
I love this, Melanie. And we're going to circle back to some of the specific changes that you've introduced
in a second.
But the mindset shift here is the big news, right? And that's what I really want people to grasp, is one of the barriers that stops people from growing is they're like, but I like doing those jobs, right? And that's something you expressed a minute ago, is I like the sourcing, you know, and so they don't want to let go of that aspect of the role because they enjoy it. But the thing that people need to realize is just because you can do something well, and even just because you enjoy doing something, doesn't mean that you should do it and you should be the one to continue doing that. Because as you pointed out, if you want to grow, you can't do absolutely every job in your business. You have to let go. Give responsibility to other people. And the other thing you said that I loved is you realized that, okay, you weren't having the satisfaction of sourcing anymore, but you got equal or perhaps even greater fulfillment from seeing a team member succeed in that role. And so that mindset shift is, I would say, is essential if someone really wants to grow. You can't hold on to everything yourself because you're going to bottleneck growth, and you're also going to, you know, burn out, and you're going to drive your team crazy as well. Good. Because you use the word hovering, because you're like, you know, you still want to be involved and being close to it, which is natural for, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs. How did you move past that and get to the point where you realize, okay, I'm the CEO and I will train people and I'll mentor them, but then I'll let them get on with doing the job and give them that autonomy, which actually is something you appreciated with your previous mentor. You said she gave you the guidance, the direction, the structure, and then she let you get on with it. And it sounds like you've come, to use the term of your business, full circle. Now you're now becoming that mentor and that leader yourself that you admired, that, you know, in your previous role. But how did you get to that point?
I think very simplistically, the results were there. I think okay. We did the one-to-ones. I handed over, and I started to pretty much immediately see who was best placed where, and the results were there. So, you know, consultants that know how to source, and they've been sourcing, and I'm giving them more sourcing, and yeah, the results are there. I also must mention that I think that by giving them more autonomy, allowing them to do what they're good at, you empowering them. And our team is very collaborative. We really have got an ethos of trust and collaboration and integrity. And I think that's filtered down so much so that people are self-driven, self-motivated. So that component is definitely there and instilled in us. And people want to create results. So there is also that element. And that also helps me go, you know what? My team's got it. We've all got each other. We talk about teamwork makes the dream work. So I think there's also that element where I know that I can leave it in their hands. I know that they're going to deliver and they're competent. So again, they've got the skill, they've got the will, and I know I can leave it in their hands. We've spoken about what they want to achieve. We know their long-term goals fit in with my long-term goals, and they've got the skill. So I could step back a bit more.
This is brilliant, Melanie. So what are some of the, you've alluded to a few things. You've mentioned one-to-ones, lunch and learns.
Yes.
I think there was a couple of other things. Could you walk us through what were some of the practical things that you've implemented that have enabled you to have that solid foundation and build a team that is so collaborative, where people are competent and they're self-motivated? That's given you the freedom to spend more time working on the business instead of in the business. What were the, like, if you were to point to, I don't know, two or three or four specific things that you introduced, what would they be?
Okay. So the immediate thing that comes up for me is when we were looking at one of my consultants has got a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. She's very contagious, wants to do business development, but she hasn't had solid training. So she did come into the office with me and we did a lot of role playing, and I taught her how to do MPC. So role playing's definitely, you can do it obviously on the phone, you can do it, listen to her calls. So when she wasn't with me, listen to her calls, gave her feedback. And also a lot of mentoring. So one of the things I learned that I needed to do was coaching. You know, I've got coaching experience, not give them the answers. So ask them, what do you think? This is a scenario with the client. What do you think we should do? We've done a lot of sourcing training. So we get on to we call it any desk here, look at what they're doing, train them with the sourcing. We've done, you know, we've analyzed where each person is on their desk, identified what their KPIs are, their key performance indicators, what their development areas are, chosen development plans for each individual. And then there's something I'm forgetting. So looking at the role playing, we video record a lot of our training so that people can look at that. I think there is something else, but I can't remember right now. But there's been a lot of interaction. There's been a lot of we had a challenge the other day with a client, and this is very powerful. As a leader, I always felt that I had to give everybody the answers. But I got onto a call and said, this is a challenge, what do we do? And we rallied around. And the collective wisdom that we have as a team is very, very directive. We get a lot of direction from it. And I think that is critical and is key. So communication, we've done a lot of communication this year. We've put a lot of strategy in. We have our one-to-ones every week. We do a team session every week. And we get a lot of solutions from that. And people have a lot to contribute. And people want to contribute. And it's really driven the business forward a lot.
This is awesome, Melanie. I love what you've done. I'm in admiration of how you're creating growth within your business by empowering your team members, getting the best out of them, helping them to feel engaged and involved and coming up with their own solutions, and not you having to tell them everything that they need to do. I think that is really powerful. And you said something a second ago, there's a couple of things I want to pick up on. One is what you're describing is 100% how to grow a successful business. But what holds people back is they think, wow, that sounds like so time consuming. All that time that you're investing with everybody, the weekly one-to-ones, weekly team meetings, role plays, listening to calls, recording, training, all the things that you're, you know, suggesting. I think some people are like, how will I find the time to do that while I still need to drive revenue myself? So how have you been able to juggle the demands of, you know, your own work? You said you still enjoy the client facing and, you know, business development with growing, mentoring and leading a team.
Okay. So again, I looked up how I could free up a lot of my time. And it is quite, I also thought exactly the same, Mark. I thought to myself, you know what, how am I going to do all of this stuff with my team? And by looking at all the things that are not really, I don't want to say just making you money, because sourcing and sending CVs to clients, but there are a lot of aspects in your business that other people can do for you. And suddenly I had all this free time and a lot of breathing space. And then I was able to look at more of the business development, more of the marketing, be more creative. So, and again, it's quite short-sighted to do the sourcing, because suddenly you every day you've got more time to direct your team. They're being more efficient. They're delivering more targets, and you're freed up to do better things for your business. Like the client engagement, building more consultative relationships, having more consultative conversations with your clients, building more long-term relationships. So if it just naturally happens that you have more time because you're handing over and delegating those things that you don't need to do anymore. And I just, when people said this to me, I thought, no, that's just not going to happen. But I think you've got to, almost for me, it was a process. It was a slow process. It's not easy to let go. But as you slowly do it, for me, the first thing was having those one-to-ones and learning that people wanted to do more.
Yeah.
And then giving them more and seeing them deliver. And I guess it's also having the right people in place. You need
Definitely.
The right people in place and having that trust. But also your leadership skills are also going to be critical.
For sure.
You can't micromanage. You're going to stifle people. And that's why I say I think that collective wisdom is important, and engaging in people and asking the right questions, creating that collaboration. You're going to get better results from people.
That is so well said, Melanie. And something key you said just now that really struck me was you've got more breathing space. And in turn, having that breathing space allows you to be more creative and more consultative and more strategic. And it's kind of like what's the word I want? It's you then gain momentum, like a snowball effect, right? Because
mm-hmm.
you're creating that breathing space. You can be more creative and more strategic, which allows you to improve the business even more. And that is so powerful. I love this. I also love what you said about starting with the one-to-ones, realizing people wanted to do more, mm-hmm. that they were capable of doing more, empowering them to do so, which drove greater results. And also the difference between, you know, also having the right people and having the developing your own leadership skills. So maybe one final piece before we wrap up today, Melanie, is finding the right people is make it or break it. If you have the right people in your team, then, you know, amazing things happen. But on the other hand, you know, if you make too many hiring mistakes, then that drains your financial reserves as well as your time. So what has been your approach to making sure that people are right before you bring them on board?
Yeah, so I recently, with the new hire that I brought on in the last 6 months, I spent a lot of time asking her, thinking about what who's Full Circle, what our values are, what core competencies we need. And again, I think as recruiters, we typically know how to vet people. So obviously it's all the important things, solid references, solid questioning, solid interview process, making sure they fit in with your culture. But even going as far as looking at, you know, their achievements, for me, really getting to know and understand, especially for me in the recruitment space, and I can't emphasize this enough, have they actually achieved? So I often get referred consultants and I look at their billings. I do. And I look at, have they actually billed and are they high achievers and have they succeeded in their relationships and what's important to them? But those billings to me are very, very important, because you've got to be passionate, you've got to be resilient, you've got to be driven. Attention to detail is important, but some people are more attention to detail and they're not actually well-rounded in the bouncing back and the client relationships and the motivation and the drive. So obviously you're looking at all those core components in a good person, but there has to be that track record and that success. That to me is pivotal, because a lot of people, they love recruitment, not even love recruitment, they'll sell themselves in the recruitment space, but they don't have solid achievements. They're mediocre. We call them ducks. They float along in the pond.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
We want those eagles, Mark. We want those eagles.
Right. You want the eagles, not the ducks. It's a good analogy.
I want the eagles.
It's a combination of, you're looking for someone who's an achiever. They can point to evidence of past performance.
There we go.
But then they also have the values and the culture fit for your company. And it's that cross-section. They have to have both of those things to be a Full Circle recruiter. So that is brilliant. Melanie, I feel like we could keep talking for another hour.
Yes.
There's a lot to unpack, but is there anything else that you had hoped to talk about today or you had wanted to share that we haven't spoken about yet?
No, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to have joined the Recruitment Coach course this year. I found it immensely useful. I've learned a lot. I've gained a lot of information. And like I always say to you, I just feel like I've joined an MBA course for recruiters. And yeah, it's on. As our team always says, it's onwards and upwards. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Melanie. You are a joy to work with. And I love the energy you bring is contagious. And what is, as a coach, you want people who implement, right? And that is, I couldn't ask for a better client, because not only do you bring huge positive energy to all of our conversations, whether it's one-on-one or in a group, but also you then go and do it and then report back and say, this is what I've done. And so just watching your trajectory has been so amazing, Melanie. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And all the best for next year. And
all right.
Onwards. Thank you.
Absolutely. Take care.